Peace, peace, beautiful beings. Welcome to the Mental Health is Sexy podcast with Coach V from the 513. If this is your first time listening, welcome. And make sure you go back and listen to the previous episodes that have been recorded. I am Coach V because I am a holistic mental health and healing coach. So that just means I don't use medicine when I'm coaching my clients to improve their mental health. Now, we're not against medicine over here. We just believe that medicine only treats the symptoms of mental illness and not the root cause, which is often trauma that individuals have experienced that's went unresolved that produces behaviors that doctors call mental illness. I myself am a victor over manic depression. I was officially diagnosed as manic depressive in 2005 after experiencing the death of my father, and I'll talk about that in another episode. However, over the years, I found out that I was just an angry, hurting, guilt-ridden, abused, abusive, angry woman. So once I took a note from Michael Jackson's song, and in my case, looked at that woman in the mirror and began to do deep soul work, my mental health improved, not just on the outside, but on the inside. I began to find peace. I began to truly love myself, which meant that it was easy for me to love those around me, even if they hurt me. When I began to love myself, it was easy for me to forgive myself, which in turn made it easy for me to forgive others. All those things and more is how I holistically contribute to and improved my mental health. I use alternative and holistic means today to continue improving my mental health, because you can always get better than you were the day before, right? I am my own competition. So if I had a mental or emotional challenge the day before, that doesn't necessarily mean I needed to be diagnosed with a mental illness, but that was an opportunity for me to improve my mental health. So over here on the Mental Health is Sexy podcast, we mean mental health 365, 360 degrees around. So we don't have to be diagnosed by a physician. We want to reduce our stress. We want to be able to better cope with day-to-day life challenges. Our mental health is just that, our mental health. And over here, we believe that mental health is sexy. It's just as sexy as wanting a 6'3", tall, dark, and handsome, high credit score, fat bank account husband. It's just as sexy as wanting a slim, thick, petite woman with long hair, a flat tummy, big boobs, and a big breast. Boobs and breasts are the same thing, aren't they? Yeah, I know what I mean. The point of me describing that is people usually have an ideal mate in mind. Man or woman, they usually have an ideal mate in mind. They usually have ideal physical characteristics that they want to have in that mate. They may put that they want to have a spiritual man or woman. They may put that they want a man who takes care of his mother, or a woman who has a great relationship with her dad. Or they may put on their list they want a woman who doesn't have 50-11 kids, or they want a man who doesn't have any kids. They want a man or woman with a high credit score, nice car, house on the hills. People have been conditioned to be able to spit off those physical things. I'm just offering that mental health is sexy also. So let's put that in the top three. Let's put in the top three that mental health, how they maintain their mental health is important. They have to have gone through a process of healing or is currently going through a process of healing. They have had to went through resolving their traumatic situations from their childhood or from their previous relationship or from their adulthood. Mental health has to be just as high on that list as all of those other superficial things that I mentioned. Because, and I call those things superficial because they can fade. You can get you a man who's tall, sexy, cut, high credit score, fat bank account. But if he has a vice you don't know about, gambling, substance abuse, a hot temper, he could lose that money in that bank account because he could lose the resource that funnels the money into the bank account. He could get into a depressive state and overeat and not go to the gym, or not eat and still not go to the gym. So all that physical characteristics that attracted you to him, now they go away. So that's why I say that's superficial, because everything that we typically have been taught to write down on our list for the person that we're looking for to spend our life with can all go away and crumble if that mental health is not in order. So again, over here on the Mental Health is Sexy podcast with Coach V from the 513, we are changing the narrative around mental health, and we are offering an improved mentality that mental health is sexy. Mental health is sexy. Mental health is sexy. All right, y'all. The intro was a lot longer than I wanted it to be, but it was important. It was on my spirit. I wanted to get that out to any new people who may be tuning in to this podcast. So I'm going to take a little breaky break, and I'll be back to finish part two of my backstory. All right. Welcome back to the Mental Health is Sexy podcast with Coach V from the 513. A few days ago, I shared with you all the backstory, part one of my backstory, and how it involves mental health and how I got started experiencing behaviors that led people to believe I had a mental illness. And it started way back at the age of 16 when it first physically manifested with my, what they call self-mutilation. Layman's terms, I was a cutter. I cut myself. So if I'm not mistaken, I ended the first part basically talking about how I was able to hide my scars for 2 weeks before I was discovered. So if you missed that, I encourage you to stop listening to this one and go back and to listen to part one so that we can all be on the same page and all caught up to speed and we know what had happened was. If you have listened to the podcast of part one, then continue listening here so we can get the full story. So for 2 weeks, I was able to hide that I cut my wrist. I didn't cut my wrist. It was actually the forearm. I was never suicidal. I was just hurting. And it's funny because as I'm sitting here recording this for you all, I always speak with my hands. Whether you can see me or not, I always speak with my hands. I guess it comes from a foundation of American Sign Language. So to this day, even though I haven't signed like in forever, I still talk with my hands. So it's funny. Okay. So in talking with my hands, I'm gesturing. And then, you know, I see the, you know, evidence of my scars, and they're on my forearm. I promise you all, they're not on my wrist. That was a Freudian slip. They're on my forearm. Again, I was never suicidal. I just was in a lot of pain. And at the time, I didn't know how to articulate that pain. I didn't know how to get the help that I needed because I couldn't even figure out the words to say what type of help I needed. I just knew I was unhappy. I knew I was sad. And in the space that my mother was in, she was not the best person to get that type of help from. Like, I even knew that back then. I didn't know why until later as an adult, but I just knew back then, okay, I can't talk to my mama. She ain't it. That's not the move. So for 2 weeks, I wore turtlenecks because this was in October. So it was cold out, you know, it was fall, it was brisky. And if anybody knows Cincinnati weather, like it gets, we have really crazy weather. Like it's very temperamental. Our weather is very temperamental. But at that time, you know, it was cold. So turtlenecks were in, long sleeve shirts were in, coats were in, jackets were in. Excuse me. So it was easy for me to go 2 weeks and hide it.
I shared a room at the time with my younger sister, and I remember she saw something was going on with my arm, but I don't think I really showed her up close. Excuse me, I just basically sworn her to secrecy type thing, like a sister secret type thing. So one day, it happened to be a Sunday, I remember so clear. So as I mentioned on a previous episode, my mother was very religious. And at that time, she was a Jehovah's Witness. And that was actually the only religion I grew up with. Prior to my mother converting to being a Jehovah's Witness, we did not have a regularly practiced religion in our household. My sister and I would be taken to church by our grandmother, which is my mom's adoptive mother, or we'd be taken by our aunt. And it was always either on Easter Sunday for the Easter egg hunts or, excuse me, or like a Christmas or something, but it wasn't a regular routine of ours. So when my mother converted to being a Jehovah's Witness, it became a regular routine. So on Sundays, we would get up and get ready to go to the meeting at the Kingdom Hall. And on this particular Sunday, I don't remember what my mother called me for, but she called me out of the bedroom into the living room. And back in those days, like, you didn't keep mama waiting. Like, if you was butterball naked, you better either show up naked front and center, or you better grab a towel or grab a sheet or something. But it better not take you more than a pair of seconds to get there when mom calls, especially in a single floor apartment. Like, you better skedaddle. So out of fear of being too late to present myself in front of my mother, I grabbed a shirt, draped it over my arm, kind of like a waiter does in a fancy restaurant, and I ran out to speak to my mom. And I believe she asked me, why did I have that shirt on my arm? I guess it just looked awkward that I showed up to her with a shirt on my arm, looking as if I was holding it, when I could have either left it on the bed or... I wish back then I put the shirt on, because that would have looked more realistic. But by me coming out with it draped over my arm, I guess created suspicion. You know what? I wonder if my sister dined me out. Anyway, back then, I didn't think I was dimed out. I just think I made a mistake in judgment by coming out with a shirt draped over my arm like garçon at the fancy French restaurant. So she asked me, why did I have the shirt on my arm? And I told her I was about to put it on, or something I said, thinking I was cool and in the clear and thinking like, okay, just ask me what you need to ask me so I can go back in the room and get dressed, please, so we can get to this meeting. Excuse me. Whatever answer I gave her, of course, wasn't sufficient enough. So I feel like I had to take the shirt off of my arm, or I feel like the shirt dropped, like slid off my arm, but I can't remember why. But either way, when the shirt fell off or was removed from my forearm, underneath it, my skin was very dark and gross looking because the cuts were so deep, I should have gotten stitches. So they weren't deep enough for me to bleed out, obviously, because I'm still here. And they weren't deep enough, like my arm was hanging off or anything gross like that. You know, one of them was deeper than the others, as I shared in a previous episode, but most of them were, for the most part, superficial, but then still kind of deep, because I still should have gotten stitches. Like, they were beyond the surface. Like, you could see the white meat. Like, it was really gross. And since I didn't get stitches, my body had to heal on its own. So, of course, I would go in the bathroom and clean it up in private and put ointment on and put band-aids on and stuff, and then put my clothes on and go to school or go to work, wherever I had to go. Excuse me. But in reality, I should have gotten stitches, period, point blank. So just think about, I don't know if you've ever had a wound, or if you, one of your loved ones had a wound and it wasn't treated properly with medical attention, meaning there weren't stitches or there wasn't the bonding glue or any type of procedure done to bring that skin back together so that your body can properly heal. When you don't do that and it's just an open wound, the body goes and heals it as it sees fit. And it's a pretty gross thing. You know, I basically was doctoring myself, and maybe it was covered up too much. Maybe it wasn't covered up enough. I don't know, but it was a gross mess. Like, it was gross. And mind you, I am a brown skin girl, and I am like, and I have a red undertone, thanks to the Native American side, but I'm brown. Like, I am a golden caramel brown complexion, and I was a little bit lighter when I was younger. So with that being said, to have a huge, dark, gross looking spot on my forearm was very, very noticeable. Very noticeable. It was as if my forearm was bruised, right? And then in the center of the bruising, there are all these open cuts that are self-healing without proper medical attention, if that makes sense. And I'm not trying to gross any of my listeners out. I just want to give you as clear a picture in your mind of what was going on my forearm. So, and it was painful. So when I would move about my day, I would hide the pain because I didn't want to be exposed. I knew that what I had done was inappropriate and was going to be judged harshly by the community. And I knew that if they found out at school, it would be an issue. And I knew that if my mom found out, it would be an issue. And I knew that if my friends found out, it would be an issue. So it was something that I was diligent about hiding. It was a secret I was diligent about protecting. And I didn't know what I was going to do when and if the time came that I was exposed. And that particular Sunday, that time came. So when my mother saw a significant discoloration on my forearm, she asked me, "What is that?" And I just got quiet. I was the type of kid, instead of lying, I just didn't answer. You know, I didn't care how much I got yelled at. I didn't care how much I got popped in the mouth. Like, I just didn't answer. I would rather just go mute than knowingly tell a lie. Like, I just always been that way. So I didn't answer my mother. So then she grabs my wrist and flips my arm over to get a good look at my forearm. And as now that I'm a parent, I think I have a better idea of imagining what my mother was going through at that moment when she saw that her child had a gross, discolored something going on with her forearm. So she asked me again, what was it? What happened? And in fear of me thinking of, and in fear of her thinking that someone did this to me or that I was being abused, I blurted out, "I cut myself." And I remember, like, even telling y'all this story now, in my mind's eye, I remember my mom's face morphing from angry concern about what is this, who did this, to a very horrifying, surprised expression, like, "You did this?" You know, so it went from protective mode, like, "What is this? What happened to your arm?" Demanding answers to, you know, I remember, I'm making the face, but y'all can't see it. You know, I remember her eyebrows being furrowed, her lips being tight. "Who is this? What is this? How did this happen?" And then, like, in slow motion, her eyebrows going from a deep, angry V to, you know, going up, 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 and up to shock. And then I remember her face going from shock to disgust, like, "You did this? Why did you do this? What's wrong with you? They're going to put you in a white coat and lock you up in a padded room. And they're going to give you crazy medicine. And how could you do this? And do you want to go away? I'll call the hospital now. You can get in a white jacket. They're going to tie your arms." I mean, I clearly remember my mother going what we call today ham. She went off.
She flipped her wig and she didn't even wear a wig ever. Like, my mother went off. So we didn't go to the meeting that day, needless to say, because I think it was such a traumatic experience for my mother with the regular day-to-day challenges as being a single parent. And I think at the time we didn't have a car or something. I mean, it was just, she called and canceled whoever our ride was and we weren't going to the meeting. And she dismissed me into the room. And I believe I stayed in the room the entire day. Didn't go to work that day. And it was all bad. It was all bad for me because that's not the reaction that I needed. I didn't know what I wanted at the time, but I, as an adult, I can look back and say that I would have wanted her to be understanding and nurturing and show me some love and talk to me and get me some help and get herself some help. But at that time, in that moment, I didn't think about all of that. What I immediately thought was, you know what? Won't do that again out in the open. That's what I thought. That was my immediate thought. That, you know what? When I do this again, it wasn't even an if. And I'm just keeping it 100. It wasn't even an if. In my mind, it was a when I do this again, it will be in a place that's not as visible. And that was the resolve I walked away with. I'm sure, knowing me, that I cried back then because I didn't want to get sent away. I didn't want medication that makes me drool. I didn't want to be in a padded room. I didn't want to leave my school. I didn't want to leave the people who I thought were my friends. I didn't want to leave my sister. I didn't want to leave my mom. I didn't want to be in a white jacket and my arms buckled down and strapped down behind me so that I can't harm myself. I didn't want those things. I was hurting. I wanted to be loved. I wanted to be understood. I wanted to be treated with compassion. I wanted to be treated what I thought would be fair. I wanted to be guided. I wanted to be directed. I wanted my weird, quirky ways to be accepted and embraced. I wanted my extreme nerdism and intellect to be embraced and not made fun of. I wanted a relationship with my dad. I wanted to know about the birds and the bees. I didn't want to be yelled at and cursed at one day, and then the next day, we in the Kingdom Hall singing praises to Jehovah. I didn't want to get popped in the face and things thrown at me at home because you've had a bad day at work. But then that evening, we're in the Kingdom Hall learning about how to go preach on Saturday to people the word of God. Those are the things that I wanted. I was a typical teenage girl going through changes, very naive, and I just wanted to be loved and supported. And instead of getting that, I got such an extreme reaction. And I nowhere knew the things I know about mental illness today. I didn't know none of that back then because I didn't know or think that I was mentally ill. I just knew I was hurting. And I just knew that my mother, for whatever reason, because again, back then I didn't know, I just knew that my mother was not able to give me the things that I needed as a child at that time. So for 2 years, that behavior of cutting lay dormant. I never went to the hospital. I never sought medical care. It was a household secret that, oh, my oldest daughter is a cutter. She crazy. Because those words are thrown at me the next time I screwed up in school or screwed up in home or whenever my mother felt upset, then I was crazy. And then, of course, as typical Black family fashion, all the relatives were called. So later on in my adult life, when one of my aunts and I got into it, she called me crazy. You crazy, you know, you cutting yourself, that's crazy. And I just remember telling her, yeah, I did cut myself. So if I did it to myself, it's nothing for me to cut you. Nothing. And I just remember her face and her shock and her horror, like, what? you know, as she ran in the house and closed the door. You know, so as I got older, I continued the behavior of cutting. I just didn't do it in outwardly open places because I knew that that got a particular reaction that I didn't need. And then in some twisted fashion, like the example I just shared about the altercation between me and my aunt, I found it empowering, that I was able to harm myself and still hold a job, still take care of my home, still drive a nice car, still pay my bills, you know, still look nice, still keep my hair done and my nails done. Like I was functioning. It got to a point where it was a twisted sense of pride that I was able to do those things. You know, it was my deep, dark secret that I was a cutter. And it was a twisted sense of pride for me because deep down inside, I wasn't proud about it. I was just trying to control the narrative about it. And I was aware enough to know as a young adult that I was trying to control the narrative about it because I resumed cutting at the age of 18. Like I said, for 2 years, it lied dormant because I was still at home with my mom. When I moved out at 18, I picked the behavior back up. It just wasn't on my forearm. I'll tell y'all that in another episode, that story. So let me know what you think. If you got any questions or comments about this episode, send them to bookcoachv@gmail.com. V is spelled V-E-E, bookcoachv@gmail.com. Put in the subject line question for podcast, idea for podcast. If you want me to talk about something specific regarding mental health, you can put idea for podcast in the subject line. But if you have a question or comment about this episode, please put question for podcast episode 4 so that I will be able to reference what you are asking me about. And I will answer the question in a future episode. Thank y'all so much for listening in on Anchor and Spotify and Apple Podcast and Google Podcast and podcast.com or whatever all the other platforms are. And thank y'all for listening in and sharing the podcast to make this one of the top listened to podcasts. You see how I'm speaking that into existence? Speaking it into existence, because that's how important I think mental health is and mental health awareness and us being comfortable with talking about it. So again, thank y'all for listening to the Mental Health is Sexy podcast with Coach V from the 513. I am a holistic mental health and healing coach and a victor over manic depression. I used alternative and holistic means to aid in my long-term recovery from mental illness, and now I spend my time teaching others to do the same. As mentioned before, we over here are not against clinical treatment for mental health challenges. However, we do believe that clinical and medicinal treatment only treats the symptoms of mental illness and not the core foundational reason behind the mental illness, which is usually unresolved, unhealed trauma. If you want to be a guest on the podcast or have an idea or a question, again, the email is bookcoachv@gmail.com. V is spelled V-E-E, bookcoachv@gmail.com, and put in the subject line question for podcast, idea for podcast, feedback for podcast, and then the episode that you're referring to. I appreciate you all. Thank you for tuning in. Peace and love. Mwah.